This is the American Ag Network Week in Review for May 5th. I'm Sabrina Hill. Coming up in a few moments, I talk with Jane DeMarchi of the American Seed Trade Association on regulations for gene editing. But first, Rusty Halverson has this week's top news.
Springfield work in much of the northern plains has been running well behind normal for this time of year. Drier and warmer conditions over the coming days, helpful to improve conditions for planting. We visited about the planting window with Josh Miller, Technical Marketing Manager for Plant Health for BASF.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things to keep in mind is that we tend to think that it's later than it really is. It is still the beginning of May. We're still in the ideal planting window. We're not outside of it yet. So the thing is to keep in mind that we're in the right time to do things right. So that is planting, that is planting the right soil conditions. It's using the right fertility program, the right herbicide program. It is cooler now, so that could be using a fungicide or seed treatment to help that crop get up and out of the ground. But I think more than anything, we just try to keep in mind that we're not late. We're still in the ideal planting window. So we want to make sure that we're not rushed, we're not doing things in a haphazard way that could be detrimental further down the season, further through the season, because you do only get one chance to get that crop in the ground, right, and that's going to impact the rest of the season for you.
Getting the crop off to a good start is the key.
Corn especially, we want to make sure that we have rapid and even emergence. That's one of the things we want to keep in mind there. So a product like Xanthion that BASF has to offer is a good product that would fit into your region right now, especially in these conditions. It's a combination product of headline and a biological component that not only protects the plant from soil-borne diseases, but it also gives the plant that extra plant health benefit, which is going to help get more uniform emergence, which we know is really important in corn crops.
Improved seedling health allows for increased nutrient and water uptake, maximizing yield potential.
Early in the season, with the Xanthion product, when it's in there, we're seeing that we're getting more even emergence. Later in the season, we want to make sure that we have this either pre-exer in soybeans or headline amp in corn as part of your acre solution, because we've got over 550 on-farm trials in both crops now. And from those results, it's actually pretty even between both of them. They're both about a 92% success rate when we have a benefit over the untreated check. And in beans, that's an average of 4.5 bushel. So if it's part of the upfront conversation when we're actually talking and planning out what that acre solution is going to look like, having a fungicide in that conversation is going to be one way to make sure that we get consistent yield results and the most value out of that crop.
Growers looking for maximum disease protection for their corn crops throughout the growing season can also follow up with Praxor fungicide, pre-tassel, and or headline amp fungicide at tassel.
Think about the acre as the entire acre. What's the solution for the acre? So that's anything from the time of planting, making sure the soil conditions are right, making sure the fertility is right. There's a lot of agronomics that go into it. And then part of your chemistry package that goes along with that is the herbicides I mentioned earlier, and then the fungicides as well. And again, corn and beans, both of those we need to think about early season and when we get into the mid-season. Early season right now, we want to make sure that the corn gets up uniform out of the ground. We want to make sure that the soybeans are not rotting in the ground with cool weather, being subjected to soil-borne pathogens. So that's where the seed treatments can really come into play. But also thinking forward, oftentimes fungicides are the last dollar spent on that acre, so they can easily be the last dollar not spent as well, depending on how the season's going, because when you get that far into the season, you've already realized that you've spent so much money on that acre, it becomes a cost at that point. But if we start thinking about what consistency looks like with these products, when we think about 92% return or positive yield response, and that looking at 44.5 bushel yield response in soybeans, that's part of a conversation where we want to get consistent yield benefit. So we need to think about it in the beginning of the season, so it's part of our acre solution where we're getting yield benefit and return on investment of these products.
Miller suggests visiting with a nearby BASF rep to come up with a game plan or learn more at BASF.com. As producers play catch up on getting this season's crops in the ground, experts are reminding us that more than just cash crops are important for the long-term health of the soil and the farm. Kirsten Rall files this report.
Cover crops may be a small part of your operation, but the impact they have on the soil makes them worth it. As we move into the start of this planting season here in the Northern Plains, farmers' foremost priority is to get the cash crop in the ground. Evan Tweed, a technical agronomist for As Grow DeKalb, has a few tips and reminders on cover crops this year.
The idea is to help the soil really get to a little bit better health is really what it's there for. So,
also noting that farmers are not limited because
there's a wide array of mixtures of cover crops that you can plant out there.
Tweed also finds that certain cover crops help with certain areas of soil health.
Some of those plants that have bigger roots on them, like a turnip, would be to break through any compaction and do a little bit of aeration out in that soil so that the roots are able to go through it a little bit better. And also sometimes we use a cover crop like a legume of sorts, whether it be peas or soybeans, something that fixes nitrogen. That puts some nutrients back in the soil.
As farmers may know, fitting a cover crop into your rotation is difficult, especially when you're not making a profit off that crop. But farmers may have some options when it comes to planting them.
A lot of guys are trying to mix in a cover crop alongside with their cash crop.
Or planting cover crops in
the areas that you weren't able to get planted, like your low spots or your wet spots.
In all, Tweed says most farmers have not mastered rotating cover crops into their crop rotation, but the hassle they impose is worth the health of the soil. I'm Kirsten Rall.
And I'm Rusty Halverson for the American Ag Network.
At Washington Watch 2018 last week in Washington, D.C., I talked with Jane DeMarchi, Vice President for Government and Regulatory Affairs with the American Seed Trade Association. We discussed the topic of gene editing versus biotechnology when it comes to government regulations. Here's the interview. And I wanted to talk to you about gene editing today and get an update on what's going on with it. So you and I have talked about it quite a few times, but what's going on right now?
Well, the most recent thing that's happened is that USDA put out a statement on their intention and their point of view around gene editing. And what that statement clarified was that most applications of gene editing, where you essentially could reach the same endpoint through gene editing as you would through traditional plant breeding, they don't see any additional risk and don't see a need for additional pre-market regulations. So what they're really saying is that gene editing and many applications of gene editing are not biotechnology within their current understanding of their rules for biotechnology. And we feel that that was really an appropriate statement to make. It clarifies, it's not a new regulation, it clarifies what their existing regulations are, and it sends a strong signal to the international community about where the United States stands. And in fact, Undersecretary Aiba was recently in Colombia communicating that to our international partners. And as you know, as we've always said, this isn't just a United States conversation. This is a global conversation, and it's critical for us that the global regulatory system works so products and seeds can be moved internationally. So we're looking for countries around the globe to reach the same conclusions that the USDA has.
And I want to make sure that I'm understanding this correctly. And this isn't to say that there's anything wrong with biotech, but that we're talking about different processes that the American Seed Trade Association says should be handled differently as far as regulations.
That's exactly correct. And thank you for asking that clarifying question. It is confusing. You know, the current regulatory framework at USDA really is trying to make a distinction. Is this a novel characteristic that we haven't seen before or can't appear in nature, or that is a potential plant pest? That's what the USDA regulatory system is looking at. And so what the statement that USDA put out is saying is, when we look at gene editing, we don't think those are novel characteristics that or potential plant pests, and therefore we do not, in most cases, need to have an additional pre-market review. Now, of course, they always have regulation over all plants, in the same way that FDA has regulatory authority over all food. So they will always reserve the right to make a determination that something does need a pre-market review because of whatever they determine.
these pre-market reviews that could happen, they can be quite lengthy, can't they?
Yes, that is really what has been of concern to us, because this is a tremendous tool, gene editing, the CRISPR technology. And if it goes through the current pre-market regulatory system, those are processes that take 10 to 12 years, cost over $100 million. And that would really be a limiting factor on it being able to have the fruits of that innovation be realized, because really only a few companies and a few crops can you make that kind of investment in that type of regulatory review.
And so I want to get to the bottom line for our farmers, our growers who need these seeds and need the technologies. What's the bottom line for them?
So one of the things that we're most excited about is the range of crops that can use gene editing, and also some of the potential characteristics that will be reached with gene editing. Disease resistance is, of course, very important to growers, and we see a lot of opportunities there, see a lot of opportunities in things like vegetables and trees, again, things that have not had access to biotechnology traditionally. But I think looking beyond the farmer, one of the things we're very excited is about consumer attributes, better nutrition, better flavors, products that maybe take fewer inputs. So, you know, improve the sustainability profile for various crops. What we know is that those things are very important to consumers, and we hope to see more of those characteristics being brought to the market.
Jane, any other comments that you'd like to make for us?
No, I think that's it. You know, I guess the one other thing I would say is that FDA did put out a request for information and how they should look at gene editing. And our response to them for that request was to say that they have the current regulatory system in place that they can use for gene editing as well. And in most of those cases, if it is not a new characteristic where it's not more toxic or produces more allergies, then in most cases it shouldn't need to go through an additional regulatory review.
Again, Jane DeMarchi, Vice President for Government and Regulatory Affairs with the American Seed Trade Association. That's this week's Week in Review from the American Ag Network. I'm Sabrina Hill. For Rusty Halverson and myself, thanks for listening. Join us again next week.